Good morning, this is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra. This is Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is 19 February 2024, and last lecture we were finally getting into the last narrative on that 2019 Nature paper describing how that protease in the inner mitochondrial membrane, in association with levels of phosphatidylethanolamine within the inner mitochondrial membrane, was linked to proteolysis of peptides that are involved in mitochondrial fusion reactions. So I'm not going to go into any more detail than that, because then I'm going to recapitulate everything I talked about last lecture. So we'll pick up where we left off. I realize I was cut off. It's funny, I was cut off at the last four words of the last sentence I was going to cover. So we'll just go back to that. Remember, we were telling you that the depletion of the phosphatidylserine decarboxylase reduced mitochondrial phosphatidylethanolamine levels, and because of that, the YME1L, that's the protease, was functional, was activated. Now, I was at the point where, and conversely, there was an increase in mitochondrial PE levels in cells where they knocked out a protein called TSC2. And when they knock out that protein, which normally suppresses the activity of mTORC1, you get a hyperactive mTORC1. And therefore, you start to accumulate the protease normal protein substrates, meaning the protease is not functional. It's a funny way to say it. Increasing the protease substrates means the protease is less functional. Now, the whole reason for that is, remember, way back at the beginning, we were talking about what's in situ in the mitochondrial membrane versus what occurs when transcription and translation are fully on for the induction of a process to regulate fusion, fission, mitophagy, or a stress response, perhaps associated way back at a medical signature such as in cancer. Okay. And don't worry, we're going to get back to that last component of the biomedical association, I think, this lecture. So that means that mTORC is responsible for controlling overall phospholipid biosynthesis, because mTORC is an anabolic kinase, central core for the regulation of nascent global transcription, nascent global translation, particularly that translation component. mTORC plays an absolutely essential role. Okay. So if mTORC is functional, then proteolytic activity will be lower. And that's because you're anabolic, not catabolic, right? The cell is. Okay. So overall, that was the last sentence I was saying last time. I iterated a couple of different ways. So overall, a decrease in mitochondrial phosphatidylethanolamine from the various pathways we talked about, including phosphatidylserine decarboxylase, which is a protein that has to be translocated into the mitochondria. And remember, that translocase is a substrate for the proteolytic degradation catalyzed by YME1L when mTORC is inhibited or low. Okay, so appears that decreased mitochondrial PE levels may activate protease-mediated proteolysis in the mitochondria. Okay? That's a direct readout. Now, where does phosphatidic acid, phosphohydrolase, come in, right? The phosphatase. Well, we're finally going to get down to that basic structural narrative feature of this paper and the full discussion for this mosaic. Now, they wanted to directly monitor PE levels. And they wanted to see how PE levels affected that proteolytic event in the IM. Now, they did something I mean, if I was reviewing this paper, I would have been a little skeptical of it. Okay? They wanted to reconstitute the system into liposomes. So these are going to be manufactured lipid structures in solution that would have components that reflected what happens in a mitochondrial system. Now you see it's artificial. Liposome is artificial. So that means you're not going to have all the proteins, you're not going to have all the cofactors, and you're certainly not going to have all the different lipid components. These liposomes are often made with just one or two different lipid molecular species, to make it simple. So their reconstitution experiment, I'm not sure why they wanted to do it. I think it's because their data was not real clean. They didn't show all the data in this paper, and they don't in Nature papers. Now, these Nature papers are really dense. They're packed with a lot of data, and the discussion section is usually rather fed into the results section. So they're trying to explain what they think their data is saying, and then the paper ends, right? So there's a lot of like fast talking in Nature papers that may overlook, at least this has been my experience, what else is known in the literature, particularly in lipid metabolism. And I keep on pounding home this point. It is because of all the different molecular pathways in eukaryotic biochemistry. Prokaryotic, to some extent, is better covered, actually. In eukaryotic, that is in biomedicine, in normal canonical biochemical papers where we're talking about human metabolism, there is a deficiency in an understanding of the scope of lipid metabolism by the researchers, because the researchers very, very seldom will have had a true graduate level or medical school level full semester course in lipids. They may have had a course in protein, nucleic acids, certainly courses that are just general biochemistry at the graduate level. But general biochemistry at the graduate level, not taught by a lipid biochemist, is going to be very, very, very subducted to beta oxidation fatty acids, you know, ketone bodies, and maybe a little bit about fatty acid synthesis, and maybe just one slide on a PowerPoint presentation. Here's phospholipid metabolism, right? And you know from just the last three or four lectures, actually all the last nine lectures, the phospholipid biosynthesis, just glycerol phospholipid synthesis, is highly complex. It involves multiple organelles, multiple intermediates, and that's only talking about a standardization of the molecular species involved. If you add in all the different potential for unique fatty acids in the one or two position of a preformed phosphoglycerol lipid in the membrane, you start generating more and more molecular species of lipid, which are not stable in the membrane. They turn over. And you'll remember that we were discussing phospholipase A2 and eicosanoid leukotriene biosynthesis, which actually may appear here in this series of lectures, just as a little, real brief interlude, just to make you guys happy, because I know you really like the leukotriene journals, journal discussions. So they built these liposomes, so they reconstituted everything. So they have YME1L. And then they have some substrates for that protease. What do you think they use? They use TIM-17A, and they used, of course, the inner mitochondrial membrane dynamin protein known as OPA1. They did it in a cell-free system in the presence of liposomes, and they looked at membrane-associated proteolysis when they had ATP, right? Because you need energy to do the proteolytic event. Now, then they tell you that they use two different types of the protease. They had the YME1L wild type, and then they had a mutant. And the mutant is non-functional, right? So the mutant was an E543Q, okay? So YME1L wild type, but not the mutant, degraded both of those substrate proteins in an ATP-dependent manner. And decreasing in the liposomal study PE levels from some maximum concentration, mole percent, I should say, of 34%, which is really high, to lower and lower levels of PE in that inner membrane, as they lowered that PE in that inner membrane, that caused an increased proteolysis of those two inner membrane proteins. Normally found in the inner membrane. Here, of course, this is in this liposome. So you see how this whole set of experiments worked up, right? Same thing we just told you. So what they're claiming is that mTORC, which wasn't in the liposomal system at all, right? Because the liposomes, totally artificial system. mTORC signaling seems to regulate PE levels in mitochondria. Going back to the mTORC inhibition studies in the same paper we just covered last lecture. And they're saying the regulation depends upon protein degradation by the protease, okay? Because you know that mTORC will increase phospholipid synthesis. So if you inhibit mTORC, you're going to activate the protease, okay? And that's what they're doing in this liposomal study here. Did this protease really degrade proteolytically those two really significant proteins in the membrane? So they're saying that this protease, YME1L, assembles with the membrane scaffold these two different protein complexes called SLIP2 and SPI complex, and that in vivo, in the mitochondria, because that protease is scaffolded by that complex, you get a spatial restriction, that is a geographical dislocation of the protease because of alterations in phosphatidylethanolamine. So they're arguing even with small mole percent changes in PE in the inner eye and the inner mitochondrial membrane would be sufficient to alter that scaffolding system so that the protease comes more direct contact with those inner membrane proteins. So that's their argument. Decreasing the mole percent of PE changes the inner membrane molecular structure in such a way that the protease is moved closer to the substrates. In this case, the substrate OPA1, which is the dynamine, which is involved in the fusion reactions. And then that TIM17A is actually a protein translocase. Remember that? That's one of the other proteins. And that normally exists in the intramembranous complex system between the inner membrane and the outer membrane. Now, let me finish through this. They use small interfering RNA, and they suppressed five of the mTORC proteins known to regulate lipid metabolism. So this is where the phosphatase is going to come into, finally, center stage. So mTORC is going to then induce transcription translation of proteins. And these are going to be enzymes that are involved in regulating phosphoglycerol lipid and sphingolipid metabolism, including those involved in the mitochondria. So they wanted to know, when they suppress those target proteins, normally turned on by mTORC, they wanted to know what's going on with this protease YME1L. And what they found, when they knocked down, using siRNA, phosphatidic acid phosphatase, also known as phosphatidic acid phosphohydrolase, also known as lipin-1, that impaired YME1-dependent proteolysis in cells treated with the mTORC inhibitor TORIN-1. Okay? So they're saying, gee, it made it so that that protease didn't function completely coherently when we removed potentially this protein that is normally enhanced in expression at the transcriptional translational level by mTORC, which they're inhibiting. You see? So they go on to say that mTORC mediates the phosphorylation of lipin 1. Even though mTORC is involved in regulation of phosphoglycerolipid biosynthesis, in this particular case, they have determined from the literature that mTORC phosphorylates lipin 1. And what does it do when that phosphorylation occurs? It makes the enzyme lose its phosphatase activity. And they're saying that then results in an accumulation of phosphatidic acid, which is the precursor substrate, right? And they're saying because phosphatidic acid is increased, you're getting a higher overall synthesis of glycerophospholipids. Now, you know, last couple of lectures, that the phosphatidic acid phosphohydrolase, making diacylglycerol, is one of the first committed reactions for making, for synthesizing many phosphoglycerolipids, right? The nucleotide pathway, the polar head group exchange pathway, to name two major ones we've been discussing. So I guess they have an unusual way of looking at what diacylglycerol accumulation in the cell might do. But let's continue on and see what they say. They're saying mitochondrial phosphatidylethanolamine levels were reduced upon inhibition of mTORC. Now, why would they say that? Because they're saying that mTORC phosphorylates lipin 1. When mTORC is inhibited by, say, taurine, right, then lipin 1 is active. And they're saying if lipin 1 is active, PE drops. So they say that demonstrates that lipin 1 regulates the accumulation of PE. That is when phosphatidic acid phosphohydrolase is active because it's not phosphorylated by the mTORC1, okay, then that production of diacylglycerol is somehow decreasing the concentration of phosphatidylethanolamine. That's what they're going on to say here, right? Now, I say, well, that might be. I mean, you're going to have to explain to me which part of the pathway then is specifically blocked when diacylglycerol is actually normally synthesized so that PE couldn't accumulate. Well, they're going to go on and do that. But I'm saying right here, I say or PE synthesis is not from whatever pathway they're assuming would be corrupted by the normal production of diacylglycerol, by the activity of lipin 1, which is the phosphatase. Okay, you see how their logic is, and see how I insert my caveat. Okay, so let's follow through. Lipin 1, they say, limits cellular accumulation of phosphatidic acid. Okay, why would that be? Well, lipin 1 generates diacylglycerol from phosphatidic acid, of course. They're saying that because you limit the cellular accumulation of phosphatidic acid, that drives membrane association and therefore activation of the CTP choline cytidyl transferase alpha isoform. Now, that enzyme is responsible for phosphatidylcholine biosynthesis. And so what they're arguing is that when lipin 1 is functioning, the fact that it's dropping PA levels, somehow that's going to cause CCT-alpha, that phosphatidylcholine biosynthetic rate-limiting reaction, to be translocated, okay? And that when it's translocated, that's when it's active, all right? Now, here's a problem. Many different phospholipids support the translocation of the CCT alpha kinase, okay? Many, not just phosphatidic acid, right? Because the reason that phosphatidylcholine biosynthesis is turned on is to regulate the various mole percent of all of the phospholipids in the membrane, because synthesis of phosphatidylcholine will allow it to get into active play in all those intermediary phosphoglycerol lipid pathways I just went through, including sphingomyelin utilization of phosphatidylcholine, but also the nucleotide pathways. And don't worry, I'm going to cover all that back in a minute. So they're saying that that downregulation of lipid 1 stabilized the proteolytic substrate TIM-17-alpha. Now, why is that? Downregulating lipid 1, they say, increases PE. So if it increases PE, it's going to prevent the protease, remember the geometrical association of the protease with substrates, to TIM-17A. Of course, in a background of TORN-1 treatment, which means knock down mFORX. You don't have any nascent transcription translation going down, right? So any additional depletion of the choline cytyltransferase will then restore proteolysis to the TIM-17A. Okay, so they're saying that because they're arguing that if that choline phosphatidylcholine biosynthetic enzyme is depleted further, it will not be able to carry out the full processing of PC synthesis. All right, that's kind of a convoluted way to make their data sound right, my opinion. And they're saying the stability of the protein translocating TIM-17A mirrors mitochondrial phosphatidylethanolamine levels, whereas the depletion of the phosphatase preserved PE, okay, so when you start to lose PE and generate DAG in TORN-treated cells, you get a downregulation of CCT-alpha. And that blunts the effect and causes a decrease in mitochondrial PE. Okay, so that's their argument. So they're saying the cytyl-choline, CDP, cytyl-choline, cytyltransferase, rate-limiting step for phosphatidylcholine biosynthesis, is acting downstream from phosphatic acid phosphatase to regulate proteolysis by YME1L. Okay, and they're arguing that it's working downstream from the protease because they're saying, or downstream from the lipid 1, the phosphatase, excuse me, because they're saying when the lipid 1 phosphatase is functional, it's going to remove PE. And when you remove PE, what happens is you get an increase in proteolysis. Okay, so they're saying the results show that mTORC modulates mitochondrial PE via phospholipid signaling cascade, where the inhibition of mTORC1 activates lipid 1. Of course, we see that from the TORN treatment and the kinase reaction. They're saying that will decrease PA levels and the choline cytyltransferase alpha-dependent formation of PC, decrease that as well. That will therefore ultimately limit transport of now what they're arguing phosphatidyl serine to the mitochondria, and therefore the synthesis of the PE by the carboxylase, decarboxylase. Okay, that's what they're arguing. The whole picture is now generated. Now let me see what time this is. Gosh, I hate when I have to be worried about time, because this is when the lecture is really finally getting down to it. Let me say something, go way back and talk about CDP phosphatidylcholine cytyltransferase. First of all, that enzyme is often not so much cytoplasmic, it's a nuclear enzyme. And it catalyzes the rate-limiting step in the CDP choline pathway for PC synthesis, which is only one way, not the only way, to make PC. Because you can trimethylate PE. Okay, yes. So this paper here was looking at choline to phosphatidylcholine, that's the choline kinase, then the generation of CDP choline via the cytyltransferase, that's phosphocholine reacting with CTP, PPI drives the reaction, that's lost, and then you make CDP choline. Then remember, CDP choline reacts with diacylglycerol coming from phosphatidic acid, phosphohydrolase, generating CMP and phosphatidylcholine. And that's the choline phosphotransferase reaction. Okay. Now, cytotransferase, that's CTP phosphonyl cytotransferase, is the reaction above that. You understand? Because this is generating CTP choline. I didn't detect that the people writing in the Nature paper, this is coming from one of the original discussions of how these CTP phosphocholine cytotransferase functions. This comes from a paper published in Balkan Bafazakta in 2011. So 8 full years before the 2019 paper, right? All right. So they talk about the fact that that enzyme is involved in nucleoplasmic reticulum formation in association with nuclear lamins. Not going to tell you what the rest of that paper is about. I just gave you enough information in case you're interested in what's going on with phosphatidylcholine biosynthesis in the nuclear envelope association with the nucleoplasm. Okay, a whole other very interesting story generating this nucleoplasmic reticulum. That's correct. It's a membranous reticulum from the nuclear envelope generated because of phosphatidylcholine metabolism. Okay, but I'm not going to get into detail. I just had to tell you where it came from and why they were doing that paper. Okay? So what else do I want to say about this? Okay. Ceramide activates protein kinase C and P38 MAP kinase. Those, as you remember from the leukotriene discussions, I told you I was going to bring it back. Gosh, let me check my time. Will activate those two kinases, okay, that I just told you about, are going to activate phospholipase A2 because they're going to phosphorylate it. So ceramide, which comes from sphingomyelinase, remember that's a sphingolipid, ceramide. Once ceramide is generated, it will activate protein kinase C and P38 MAP kinase. That will then activate PLA2 via phosphorylation. The activated phospholipase A2 hydrolyzes the two position of arachidonyl to arachidonyl phosphatidylcholine. All right, yet another way for phosphatidylcholine to be regenerated, understand? Because that product of that's going to be lyso-PC and then arachidonate. And your arachidonate can then be reacted on with cyclooxygenase or lipoxygenase, generating with lipoxygenase, of course, leukotrienes, right? All right. Now, lyso-PC interacts directly with the membrane lipids associated with the cytidyltransferase. And that induces the translocation of the cytidyltransferase to the nucleus. And when it's in the nucleus, it's functioning in the nuclear reticulum if it's activated, but it's inactive for phosphatidylcholine biosynthesis in the rest of the endomembranous compartments. It sequesters it there. Okay. And of course, arachidonic acid through 5-lipoxygenase is going to generate leukotrienes. And you know what the leukotrienes do? Remember this? They go back and reactivate, they up the increase of activation of PLA2. Why? Because leukotrienes elevate intracellular calcium. Remember that intracellular calcium activates PLA2. Okay. So, oh my gosh, get that now? Remember that? And all of that, recall, is associated with the production of TNF-alpha. So that is a self-reinforcing system generating phospholipid metabolism, whole different kinds of kinases to retailer the membrane during an event associated with stress. What kind of stress? Potential for mitochondrial fission, fusion, mitophagy, or cellular autophagy, programmed cell death. See how that fits right back in? Now, the paper I'm talking about doesn't talk about any of that. I'm putting it in there because my knowledge base allows me to do that, okay? Because I'm aware of all those other components. In fact, we're going through it in this mosaic, okay? I'm not going to go through any more of that because there's more detail, but that is just yet more detail about where we could go. And Fortunately, I have a stop. Bye for now.